Hey, it's Steph Dixon, and welcome to the Live Wide Awake podcast. If you've ever wondered who you are or wanted to understand yourself better or worried about how technology can be used to harness instead of harm the future generations, then you're really going to like our guest today. A conscious technologist that combines social impact, blockchain, and philanthropy, Arnaud St. Paul believes that living in harmony is our birthright. Since an awakening at 13, he's been on a relentless quest to understand himself, and now he's on a mission to help a billion people to find harmony thanks to his heartful method. Arnaud is the Chief Strategy Officer for Conscious Capitalism, a global community of leaders embracing conscious capitalism to elevate humanity and use business as a force for good. He's also the founder of Give Nation, a blockchain-powered ecosystem that teaches kids philanthropy and how to handle their money, with the intention to encourage more kindness and better long-term financial health. It's time to live wide awake. Well, it was really interesting researching you because it's almost like you're living three different lives. There is this conscious capitalism side where you look at business as a force for good. There's this heartfelt method helping leaders to find harmony within. And there's this Give Nation breaking down financial literacy for children using blockchain and Web3 technology. So how do you do all of these at the same time? And what is the connecting tie that links them all together?
What connects them together is me and my life purpose, which is to help 1 billion people to open their heart to themselves. And for that to happen, there is a need of more consciousness, which I define as the capacity to take conscious decisions, like when you pause for a moment and then you decide whether you want to go right or left, right? Or decide to have a certain type of life or another one, for instance. So that's the common ground. And it applies in business. So the whole idea there is how can we create a more conscious business, hence conscious capitalism, that offers this idea of we have more than one stakeholder, which in the old capitalism was shareholders. Now we have the clients, the providers, the shareholders as well, of course. So that's one aspect. And there I'm helping a bit less ultimately, helping the chapter in DC to strategize how we help small businesses from a conscious capitalism standpoint. And then Give Nation is indeed an ecosystem for kids from 4 to 18 to become philanthropists and practice sustainable financial literacy. And more importantly, start to practice empathy, compassion, altruism, which goes to the goal of helping people to open their heart. And we even have a card game for using NFTs where when you play the card game and you solve puzzle, it triggers donations to charities. So it's all about recreating a relationship, positive driven relationship with money, and how we can do that at scale for as many kids as we can in the world, right? If we had 1, 2, 3 billion kids on that kind of platform, that would be absolutely amazing, the systemic change we can make happen in a society.
What would that look like?
What would that look like? It would look like where you have a society that instead of having about 2% of the population giving to others, you would have 30, 40%, 50% of the population giving to others. It would be a tidal wave of good happening every day. That's what we're talking about. It's really a systemic change where everybody becomes more and more conscious of themselves. So starting them on that journey of self-actualization and growth and living more in harmony with themselves, it would be changing absolutely everything. It would also enable a world of abundance. The technology is bringing us to a place of abundance, right? With the computers and then the robots, etc. Energy is going to be abundant as well, soon enough. But at the consciousness level, you know, if we're looking at mass consciousness, we're not there. We still insist on the scarcity. So this purpose, all that I'm doing is to help on that journey, helping society as a whole, could be one company at a time or one community at a time, like through the kids, to grow, to let go of their old system, old belief systems, so that it can be replaced with something that is more in tune with their heart. That's the whole idea here. So, and hence the third aspect, which is that in the past 30 years, I had created a technology called the Heartful Method, which enables any leader to, whether it's an individual or a professional leader, it's the same thing, to live through their heart, to live in harmony with themselves, to find alignment in whatever the activities they are conducting. So it's all about creating consciousness further and pushing it further in their own lives and live a life from their heart instead of their mind.
Yeah. So how do we really though live from our hearts? Because I also read a quote of yours that said to live in harmony is your birthright, which I just sounds beautiful. You know, it really drew me in. But there's so much disharmony in the world, and there's so much disharmony within so many of us as well, you know, in our minds, with our emotions, with just, you know, the way that we're kind of tapped into the system. So how do we really find that harmony, and what does it really mean to live a life from your heart?
So I really like your question, because I do offer to whomever who wants a highlight of a workshop named Three Ways to Find Harmony Within. It's available on tapua.com/harmony. And if you can share the URL. So finding harmony, we have to understand that in any journey, any person in this world starts from a foundation of harmony. And on top of that, we're putting layers. We're adding layers of complexity, so to speak, of different identifications of two different things. And the whole idea is to come back to that harmony. So it's not that difficult. It's not an uphill battle. It's more an easing ourselves in that harmony and inner alignment and coherence. And there are three ways, or three steps, I guess, that I'm sharing in that workshop to help me in my day-to-day, in every moment, to get back to a simpler way of a simpler process and of being with myself, of allowing this moment to be fully accepted and then embraced and then have compassion for whatever was expressed at that moment. And that helps you to gradually align not only your perception of whatever is happening, but also your physical actions, your emotions, and your thoughts. Once all these three are aligned, then starts to blossom the outer harmony, so to speak, meaning where this reality within which you are is bringing about the results of the work you've done inside. Does that make sense?
Yeah, no, it does. And so I guess there must be some common things that reoccur that trip people up that kind of prevent them from staying true to that path and to really embodying those things. So what are those things that commonly trip people up or keep them stuck?
Only one. There's one word, which is identification. We have an amazing word around us, and it can be, I don't know, the latest brand for, you know, the bag or the purse or the car, or it could be an event, it could be a news, it could be a loved one, anything really is there to offer the possibility of whether I identify to it. So for instance, you identify as Stephanie, that's one, and Stephanie happens to be a wife, for instance, maybe, or a mother, maybe, or she's a podcaster, right? So all these are identifications. You define yourself through that. Each time you identify to something, and most likely we have several identifications, right? Because when maybe you like a scooter, a yellow scooter, so that's your thing, and you love that, which is amazing, right? No judgment there. But each time we identify to something, we create a strong relationship with something. We let go of all the other aspects of ourselves. We are not present to it anymore. So in other words, we are losing part of ourselves in that process. We can recover, we can get back to it anytime, right? But if I'm identified to some things in the past, some things in the future, some things that are happening now in the present, etc., and all this lives in the chaotic, beautiful symphony of mine, then obviously there's dispersion, and there is always that difficulty to be more relaxed, to be more here now, to be in alignment with myself, right? So this is the only key. If we want to have one, then we can go beyond that. But 99% of the time is that.
Interesting. And I know that words carry such a lot of power, and you talk a lot about this on your website as well. So what are some of the negative words that people don't realize that are actually keeping them stuck in certain thought patterns and I guess habits almost?
You see, each time I am thinking something and I am potentially saying it as well, right? There's a potential alignment there, but whatever I am playing in my head and saying potentially is a set of words that are in relationship directly with my identities, to whomever I believe to be. So, for instance, if I am on a project and I'm saying to my teammates, I'm going to do this, everybody's going to expect me to deliver on that, right? And it is most likely that I will actually deliver whatever was that. If I say, I'll try to do it within a certain scope, then there's a very good chance that it may not happen. Is it 50-50 or something else? We don't know. And if I say I try to do it, then maybe I'm already considering myself as someone that is not capable of delivering anything, right? So all of a sudden, I maybe are know that doesn't deliver. That may be my thing. And hence, the vocabulary that I'm using is putting myself already in that framework so that I actually confirm that identification that I have. And so that's one of the examples. It's so diverse that it's difficult to pinpoint one word. I mean, yes, obviously all the negative words would fall in that category that you were mentioning. But I guess more than one word, I would look at how I'm creating sentences. What I mean by that is choosing expensive sentences more than limiting ones, constraining ones. So why expensive? Because you want to explore more potentials instead of less, right? You always want to have more freedom instead of being imprisoned in a specific belief system. And so if you could look at a more heart-oriented language, that would be an amazing way to actually take care of yourself and be more in tune with your world.
Yeah, absolutely. I think the I try is such a big one. And it's one that my mom taught me from a very young age, saying that by just using the words, I'm trying, you're like setting yourself up for failure already. So I was just nodding away completely in agreeance with what you're saying there. And it's these small words that unless they're pointed out, sometimes you don't actually realize how often you're using them. And so I think, yeah, sometimes it's important to actually have the identifiers to realize and to then know, oh, this is going to limit me and not expand me, as you were saying as well. Yeah,
exactly. And to your point, the moment I'm trying, right, I am not assertive enough to be in the dimension where this is happening. So I am still on the edge of it. I don't know. Maybe yes, maybe no. But we want to be surrounded, or at least ourselves, to be stepping in. Whatever needs to happen, I am going in and I'm doing it. And whatever happens, happens. It's okay. I'll recover from it if it's to deliver a paper or whatever. And I'll do my best. That's another option. That may be better than I try, for instance, to provide a potential replacement.
Yeah. And what about the fear and the anxiety that often creeps in for people? Because I find, how do you address that for people who really do want to get into that state of harmony and heart, but are battling a lot of stuff?
Yes, I totally understand that. When there is fear or anxiety, I can bet you anything that it happens with something related, whether in the past or the future, never in the present. That's it. So your role, anytime you feel that fear or that anxiety, push the pause button and ask yourself, who am I now? Where am I now? Because every now moment is perfect by definition. There is nothing, you know, in this moment, you and I, we're having that amazing conversation. It's perfect. There's nothing. it happens that you may have something in your house that troubles you now. But if you, within the scope of this conversation, there's absolute perfection. It's clear. And then after the conversation, maybe, boom, starts to da 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 da, and we continue the conversation with ourselves and we fall into dispersion, right? But it's connected always with an expectation or a story of something that came in the past. So yeah, let's drop that. It's a very bad habit.
Such a bad habit. I'm like a master of the expectation and storytelling. It's a complete addiction. Yes. I'm a master at it. My husband tells me all the time, he's like, you're just such a master storyteller and story creator in your mind and all these expectations you have all the time and blah, blah, blah. And I'm like working through it right now. But do you have any like practical steps? I really like what you said there about pushing pause and obviously coming into the now and asking, you know, where am I? Who am I? I think this is good. What else do you have for me?
If you could find an actual physical pause button somewhere, I don't know how, on the internet somewhere, maybe it's someone invented it. Maybe if not, we'll have to create it ourselves. And each time you see yourself in that situation, you push the damn pause button. Why not?
Push the damn pause button.
Yes. Let's have fun.
I think so. I'm at the point where I just want life to be playful. It's been very serious for a very long time. And now I just want to have fun and be playful. So push the damn pause button. I like that.
On the same line, maybe you want to have an alarm on your phone every hour where you take 1 minute to see who you are now. Who am I now? Am I playing my story number 995 or... I am here now and I'm happy to be Stephanie and doing my thing. No judgment whatsoever, but it helps you to get back to you.
Yeah, and just help to break the pattern and build new habits of thinking and rewiring of the brain.
Exactly.
Yeah, no, I love that.
Exactly.
Okay. Well, thank you for the tips, the practicality. I do love a good actionable step. So let's zoom in a little bit more to you. We'll get myself out the spotlight. I read that you actually had your first awakening when you were 13 years old. So I would absolutely love to hear what happened.
How it unfolded. I guess when I was 13, I started to have a presence to myself, right? In the sense that became more evident the truth that I held inside me than the ones that were offered to me by reality. So it started in the spiritual aspect instead of the religion, to take that example. For me, God or the spiritual self was everywhere. It was not in a church. It was not going through specific rituals and whatnot. And then very quickly, I started to help people around me on their own journey. And so really thereafter, I started on that journey of understanding who am I. That was my obsession, my addiction, so to speak. And I went into studying all the different religions, the different philosophies, the practices as well. And, you know, read a lot, but more importantly, listen to myself. These inner truths showing up in the different books that I was reading, and that helped me to ascertain my path, right? To know that I was not totally, completely mad. And then I opened up a healing center and helping people to rebirth and then continue on my journey until 10, 15 years ago when I decided that my life purpose was to help 1 billion hearts to open. And that's my thing. That's, you know, my journey. And building these initiatives to make that happen using technology, because I think technology describes well not only what I created, but also the fact that we can spread out this conscious technology into the world, right, at scale. So yeah, that's the journey I am on right now.
Yeah, I'd love to zoom in as well. Like when you were 13, did you feel different or strange? Like, what was it like as a teenager to already have had such a deep awakening when maybe those around you might not have understood or anything? Was that difficult at that time, or was it?
Difficult, I don't know. Yes, not feeling being part of the teenage world and, you know, being different. Yes, most likely, for sure. But, you know, it was also very formative and enabled the creation of who I am today. So it is worth it anyway.
Yeah, and I definitely want to come back to weaving in the technology aspect. But first, you were really on a bit of a relentless quest to understand yourself, you said. So in that journey, what kind of twists and turns did you have to do? And were there any in this lifetime of searching that you did, were there any practices that helped you figure out more than others?
Yeah, I mean, it's a great question. I guess each and every one of us has their own path towards themselves. And some of us may listen to a specific practice that resonates more with them than another. And my specific journey was one, you know, as I mentioned, I went through the different religions, so the Bible, the Quran, the Kabbalah, and the Bhagavad Gita, and the Vedas, and also went through different books. So some books that were quite important for me at the time, it could be The Alchemist, it could be the Conversations with God, or from Neil Donald Walsh, could be also Who Am I with Ramana Maharshi. That were seminal books that helped me to really understand further who I am, right? And throughout the past 30 years, as I was evolving and trying to understand myself further, were showing up drawings that helps me, that is now part of the Heartful Method. I have 160 charts that explains how consciousness works. But has it be a streamlined, super easy, straight road? No, by a very long shot, right? I've been, there were left turns and right turns all over and zigzags to fine tune how, because on one side, trying to understand myself, on the other, trying to help others and looking for ways to explain what I was going through to myself first and then to others at the same time. So that's how emerged what I'm offering today, the Heartful Method, and also Give Nation, where I have a coherent way to explain how we are having this human experience and how we can live through our heart instead of our mind.
And what is that coherent way to explain it?
That takes a few sessions to go through it. I mean,
not something I can get out of you right now. No.
Okay. I mean, I'm happy to dabble into it and in one sentence or two summarize 30 years of research. Yes, sure.
Fair.
I guess, I mean, to summarize, we have that mind that is in ourselves. And, you know, most of us are trapped in it, in that past, in that future, in these expectations, in these anxieties, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. In other words, we're trapped in not knowing between our thoughts, our emotions, our physical attributes, what is what, how it works, and more importantly, what is that I that I'm talking about all the time? I have no clue. I mean, you don't know. That's what I try to decipher. And nowadays, I'm happy to report at least that I have a comprehensive map of what is that high, how it works. And that's why I wrote my second book called I Is Born, where, you know, through 66 experiences, I can transmit in one way or another, one facet at a time of this I that is looking to become itself as much as it can, right? In any way, shape or form is doing it. Because we all have our own unique pathway. We are all going in the same direction, which is unconditional love, but we each are doing it in our own way. And some may use yoga, some may use meditation, some may use Qigong, and a mix of all that I just said, and many, many, many more, right? There's an infinite potential. It could be gardening or playing piano for that matter. It's the same process, right? It's, in any case, all these processes are there to help us to be more and more present to ourselves. And from that place, I can be me to all the depth of what I am and not just a little aspect of me. And so therefore, that mind that was so omnipresent at first is now all the presence and energy went from that mind to our heart, which is where we are in a place of abundance of infinite aspect of ourselves. And the mind is still there and the ego is still doing what it needs to do, right? It's one aspect that is super important. That's the journey of alignment and harmony we're talking about here.
Now, if we kind of circle back to what you were talking about with conscious technology and how you've weaved technology in and how this is really important part of the puzzle, maybe you can unpack that a little bit more of like how, why technology is an important part. Because I think there's a lot of technology, or people talk about a lot of technology as being negative or not actually helping in some aspects.
So technology is about collecting, identifying, and have the ability to repeat processes. And it can be a technology with, you know, computers or anything material, or it can be also a what I call a conscious technology or a human technology, in the sense that if I provide you a process that you can go through in order to get back to your heart, to take that example, then it is a technology, right? So in this case, I'm using two technologies. On one side, have created that framework that enables such a technology to happen. So yoga, for that matter, is a technology, or meditation is a technology as well. And so likewise, the Heartful Method is a technology. And then I'm using computer technology to spread out the messages of held in such a framework. And this way, I can create the consciousness growth that I am devoting my energy and life to.
And so this is where the, I guess, the billion hearts, your mission of opening up a billion hearts comes to play, because the technology allows you to amplify the, I guess, upgrading and the conscious codes or information or the program that you've designed also to be able to reach those different people. So how is that mission going right now, opening up a billion hearts?
Happily on it. I wouldn't know how to count that anyway. But, you know, having that idea of reaching 1 billion people is not a bad idea. At least it makes me happy. So, you know, as far as I know, I'm good, because even if I help one heart, it's good. If I do 100, it's still good, and 1 billion is still good. So we're on that journey. I'm obviously always looking to grow more and faster and helping more in the world around that. But I also know that I'm playing with, you know, the universe and reality, and if it's not the right time, it's not the right time. So very, very, very happy about what I'm doing. So I am conspiring with the universe to bring that about the world.
Yes, I love that. Conspiring with the universe. It's beautiful. So I'd love to tap in a little bit to the other facet of your work, which is conscious capitalism. Can you explain what that really means, and can it really exist? Is it even truly possible at a mass level scale?
Conscious capitalism is that idea that there are many stakeholders. There is more than one. There are the shareholders, yes, and employees and providers and clients, right? So there is that idea that capitalism can be shared and has a regenerative or at least inclusive purpose beyond the exclusive, the only accumulation of capital that was the old system. So in other words, conscious capitalism inscribes itself into these ideas of social impact and regenerating financing, all these new concepts that have started to exist about 15 years ago and are amplifying. B Corps is another movement. They are amplifying around the world. And they are touching every single aspect of our society. Now, is it something that is so spread out that everybody is using it? No. By a long shot. So why is that? It's because, as I mentioned before, our society at the mass consciousness level is not yet ready to believe in abundance, to live it. We prefer to think from a scarcity standpoint. So for instance, when you are anxious, it is mostly because you believe that for whatever reason, something is not going to happen. So yeah, our mass consciousness only believes in scarcity. So for instance, when you are anxious, it is most of the time because you believe that something in the future, most likely, is not going to happen because of this, that reason. So it's a presumption that something is going to be scarce. in whatever ways, for instance. So until we actually transform all this, until we actually provide ourselves with the opportunity to be present to ourselves, to live more in a place of abundance, of being in our heart and being in love with our life and ourselves, it's more unlikely that a movement like B Corp or conscious capitalism can take hold. It is growing. There are more and more people that believe in it, like more people that are believing in blockchain and all these aspects, because also blockchain thrives in abundance, right? But it's still a quite confidential number of people yet, but it's growing.
And so do you think it's just a matter of time? Or, I mean, obviously you're doing a lot to help to progress this and to activate more people into it. But what I'm asking is, what more do you think we need to go through before people wake up to this way of living and to operating from their hearts and from a place of harmony and abundance? Because there's been so much pain in the last few years in particular, and maybe there's always a lot of pain in life, but obviously the last few years have been particularly crazy. And so, yeah, I mean, we look at just the last people who were born into this generation and the generation before, how much they've had to go through. And of all these once in a lifetime or once in a century, whatever events that just keep happening, you know, it's just like one after another. So what more needs to happen before people are more activated? Or is it just things are just happening when they're meant to and we just have to be a bit more patient? I don't know.
In any case, but these events that you're talking about are amazing opportunities, absolutely amazing for people like us, because enables people to ask themselves the right question. I mean, the progress I've seen in the past few months in businesses, which is one part of what I'm working with, of having the ability for business people to talk about love and responsibility and regeneration, etc. It's amazing. It's absolutely amazing. So we have that capacity now as a society. It's more accepted, let's put it that way, to tread into new ways of doing things. And the ones that are really a direct path towards an actual progress for humanity in general and individual success at the same time. Because it's all about having a holistic approach to ourselves, to our lives, to whether it's a personal or the professional one, and delivering on that with the support of our reality.
Very, very interesting. I guess we'll see where it goes to. And so how does blockchain come into this all for you? Because you talked a little bit about blockchain also aligning for abundance, I think was the word that you connected it to. So how do you see blockchain also helping to advance this? And yeah.
You know, the ethos behind blockchain are ones of freedom, but also to provide abundance, financial abundance in that case, to millions of people that are unbanked or et cetera, and providing financial literacy at the same time. So it's blockchain provides this technology layer, and we're talking about technology here also, that enables peer-to-peer transactions, or at least within communities and across communities as well. It's therefore enabling a access to or changing the old systems into new ones that are more efficient, right? And therefore enabling more value for everyone. That's one aspect of it. Another aspect is that we are now able to engineer or create systems, so financial systems in this case, that are offering new value creation. And so therefore, for instance, to take a simple example where we start to account for nature within a financial ecosystem. This is quite important and interesting, right? And so these are ways for us to really create together and being able to allocate abundant systems so that everybody can share, basically, instead of accumulation of capital in some small hands of people. It's spreading out to everyone. that makes sense.
Thank you for explaining that. Yeah. What are some leading examples that you've seen of this blockchain or using Web3 technologies for this abundance and for the greater good?
Well, beyond GiveNation.
Yes. Well, you can also explain a little bit more about GameNation.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, actually, I could do that. The GiveNation is an ecosystem for children. And it's the GiveNation has a coin, which is the GiveCoin, which is a stable coin, where the children can learn not only about the SDGs, the Sustainable Development Goals of the UN, through a curriculum that we offer to teachers, but also they have a wallet. And it's a gamified wallet where they can receive gift coins from their parents. And then they start giving to charity or save it or invest it potentially as well down the road. And this way they have the agency from 4 years old onwards to 18 to really make an impact, right? And that is paramount to help the society to grow in terms of consciousness, as I mentioned earlier. And then we have a card game, which is a NFT-based card game with three factions, the spiritualist, the industrialist, and the technologists. And together, they have to band together because there are three teenagers, Parker, Ennui, and Spitster, that decide, we have to save the Earth and we have to do it together, etc. And so the whole idea there is teams of players solve card puzzles. And when they do, it triggers donations to the charities that are tackling the challenge in question. So for instance, the challenge could be bring water to Sudan, right? And therefore it's a nationwide challenge in this case. And so you have 10, hundreds of teams trying to solve the puzzle. The team receives a part of an NFT that is rare, obviously. And all the money that has been put in that NFT while the challenge was open could last for days or months even, then goes to a charity that are solving that issue in the physical world. So it's a little bit the concept we're working with there. And so there are many other projects to go beyond GiveNation. I'm thinking about, for instance, a company called Ethic Hub that is helping farmers, coffee farmers, for them to get finances because the coffee farmers in Mexico have to finance their crops for at a 30% interest rate. And thanks to the blockchain, it's at 2 or 3 or 5 or 10 maximum, right? So that's one aspect. There are many other projects that you could look at. Then there are a lot of different infrastructures like Uniswap that enables that DeFi swapping between tokens. That is another way of creating more abundance for everyone. And then there is that project I'm involved with right now called TFT, Threefold, that is also about creating abundance for everyone. And that's quite a very innovative concept of deploying neighborhood data centers and that are really using quantum technology and special technology to divide by 5 the cost of hosting and having your own local data center. Anyway, there are many, many examples. And even a Tesla is an amazing example, but not using blockchain. Sorry, I'm diverting a little bit, but it is in that type of category in any case.
Yeah. So fast forward 10 years, what kind of world do you think we're going to be living in?
That's an interesting question. So a possible future, let's put it that way. It most likely is a future where we'll maybe be a bit hot overall, but that's not necessarily bad because it's also, we're warmer, and maybe we're warmer together, right? Because it unites as well. And so I see a more united world. I see a world, let's make it 10, 20 years. I see a world that find in itself the solutions to the most or the biggest issues that the world is meeting as Earth or as society, or maybe, if we go into space, the whole solar system, why not? So I see a humanity that is empowered to itself, right? That is more conscious of itself, that is more driven through the heart, that has integrated more feminine values a lot more faster than before. So what took us 100 years and is not taking us 10 or 20 years to include and embrace more feminine values than before. And 10, 20 years, I think I stand a chance to have, you know, 15% of the population led through their heart, which is my purpose. And that will provide us with a world that is driven through empathy, compassion, altruism every day, every moment. A world where we live happy because we're surrounded by love. And we are actually realizing it. Because the thing is, right now, in this moment, we believe we're not surrounded by love, but that's not the case. We are. In this moment, it's a beautiful moment of love, where I am loved, you are loved by all that is now. Just, we're talking about now, because that's the only place where love can exist anyway. And so it's that realization that hopefully will get more and more prevalent in people's presence, so that we can live in a place that is absolutely magical. And why not? We can create a new Eden, right?
Yeah, I love your version of the future. I hope that happens. I hope it comes true. And it doesn't go the opposite way.
Let's work on it together.
Yes, definitely. I mean, so, and you might have seen the name of this podcast is Live Wide Awake, which I think is a big part of that. So how do you think that people can live wide awake?
Be in the now, be present to yourself. I mean, come on. It's so easy. So in your hands, and it provides you with so much love and magical things to live for. So yeah, let's be wide awake indeed. Let's do it.
Yes.
Not just live in our expectations or our past.
Exactly. Let's do it. Absolutely. Well, Anard, thank you so much for joining me. I really enjoyed our conversation. So thank you. Yes.
Thank you. Have an amazing night.
Thank you. Three things I'm taking away from this conversation with Arno. Firstly, we need to live a life from the heart and not the mind. Secondly, choose words that are heart-orientated that will expand you and not limit you. And thirdly, when feeling anxious or fear, push the pause button. Ask, who am I? Where am I? And come back to the present moment. I'm curious, what did you think about the episode and what were your main takeaways? Is there a topic you want me to dive deeper into? I'd love to hear from you. You can find me at Steph L. Dixon or at Live Wide Awake. If you got something out of the podcast and you want to continue this journey with us, consider subscribing and supporting. I hope that today's conversation stirred something deep within you, ready to awaken. And until next time, live wide awake.